Okay, I call to order this assembly of the whole meeting, October 17th, 2023. Roll call.
Colodi.
Here.
Potter.
Here.
Hansen.
Here.
Mayor Bass.
Here.
Henry.
Here.
Waddell.
Present.
Burnham.
Here.
All members present. Quorum is established.
All right, moving on to item number two, review of proposed FY24 municipal budget. We're going to focus tonight on the enterprise funds. Before I turn it over to Manager Ryan, just quickly, enterprise fund. An enterprise fund is a type of fund used in governmental accounting to account for activities that provide goods or services to the public for a fee that is meant to make the entity self-sustaining. It operates in a manner similar to private business enterprises with the intent that the cost of providing goods or services to the general public on a continuing basis be financed primarily through user charges. We're going to go through five of our primary enterprise funds tonight: clinic, garbage, water and sewer, port, and small boat harbor. You'll see that most of these funds do not meet quite that level of paying for themselves, but we understand that, we've accepted that, we know that we subsidize those different funds with sales tax or CPV, and we'll see those numbers as we go through these budget items. Again, this is still the manager's budget. He has it. He's basically having a discussion with us, educating us about what his budget is. As we go through this, we don't direct him to make changes, but we can have discussions on those items. He can either listen to those discussions and take and make changes or not. But eventually in November, we'll get back this budget also, along with the general fund, enterprise fund, and capital projects. And then we can make our changes as we see fit. So with that, I'll turn it over to Manager Ryan, and we'll get started on the clinic budget, starting with the clinic. Manager Ryan.
Yeah, so similar to the last meeting here, I'm just going to run through the budgets. I'll try to hit the highlights. I'm not going to hit every detail. If you have questions, we're here to answer them. The director of the clinic is here as well. So if it gets down in specifics beyond my understanding, he is here for you as well. To start with, so you got the clinic budget. Since you have had this in your packet, we've realized some more funding. I think I'm on the revenue right now, and you can skip over pharmacy. It's relatively small. When you get down to the revenue 330 HRSA grant, it says 510,000. We've got about another $400,000 in payments that we've now realized. So that's much better than it was a little bit ago, and we anticipate to get the full amount before the end of the year. We've also collected a significant amount in those grants of H8D through H8G. When you slide down a little bit further, if you go down to revenue C8E, which is another 4460, that is $508,000. That's a grant that is really for equipment specific. So when you think about that $500,000, if that grant gets put on the ground and we do something with it, it's a revenue source. If it does not, it's not a revenue source, and or a negative or a positive either way. So that's money in, money out for a specific grant-related item. So it doesn't affect the bottom line of how much you have to subsidize the clinic or not. Just keep that in mind. That's a grant specific to do something, you know, equipment wise or facility wise at the facility, if the clinic deems it good for the clinic, whether that's redo the emergency room or whatever it may be. So keep that in mind. When you go, you continue down, really the revenue is probably the big story, the clinic revenue itself. You see that's projected to be down, according to the clinic director. That is because he is still attempting to train up the staff and be able to get and collect all of the revenue. And so he's projecting a bit of a downturn there because he's still training up his staff and trying to hire staff for that. So that's why it's gone from a budget of 1.2 in 2023, and we're really not seeing that come through. So we've lowered that down to $960,000. In total, you have a revenue projection there of $2.8 million. If you then go down and look through the expenses, I'm going to just slide through until there are significant changes. You know, most of these are just changes based on legal, computer support, insurance, really things that are a little bit out of our control. Shipping and postage is not a big deal. Until you get down, there's employee payroll. It's down a bit. And keep moving down. I think the I want to highlight 5150. So that's the equipment line, $495,000. When earlier I was talking about the $500,000 grant, that's like money in, money out. If you put that grant on the ground, you spend about $400,000 or $500,000. That expense in that revenue is there. If you don't do either, it will lower the overall budget by $500,000, but it will also lower the revenue by $500,000. So it's a bit of a sum net sum zero. Just keep that in mind. And then really the big change here is locum tenens. We lost our last employee contracted provider earlier this year. And so now we're really using locum tenens to fill the void. They're expensive, but they're what we can get. We all know there's a healthcare shortage throughout the nation. This is three tenant locum tenens throughout the off season and four during the peak season. You also see an increase there. You got traveling nurses, and you can keep kind of scrolling down to the significant budget items. If you flip the page, probably the other significant increase is we have a visiting provider that's pediatrics, another desire for the town. In total, this whole budget is $5.1 million, $5.14. That is offset, you know, by the revenue of $2.8 million or $2.88, which means then that the municipality needs to provide $2.28 million in subsidy, which is sales tax funded, for the clinic to operate on this budget. I will say, and that is, you know, about $1.2 million increase over what was budgeted last year. Last year, the clinic director came to me and he had about a $2 million subsidy. We worked through the budget to cut it down by about $1 million. This year, this came to me again, and I think I wanted the opportunity for the assembly to weigh in on this. This is their full request of the budget. And I think the assembly has to decide at what level you want to fund healthcare and the clinic here. And that subsidy is, you know, gone up by $1.2 million.
Thank you, Manager Ryan. And I'd like to, again, kind of the same process we used last time. I'd like to go ahead and if anybody has any questions, please just raise your hand. Manager Ryan can call on you and we can go through this budget as you see fit. So please ask any questions if you have them for the clinic. Manager Ryan, I'll go ahead and ask a few questions here. I'm looking at revenue, and when I look at the revenue section, I see that, again, so in 2023, we budgeted $1.2 million, but we've only received, and this is, I guess, from clinic fees and the clinic bringing in revenue, that we've only seen $655,000 so far. Do we anticipate that going up by the end of the year?
We talked earlier today, and we think it's going to be in the 850,000 range, unless that's changed from earlier today. But yeah, we're anticipating maybe 850.
Okay. When I look back at the 2022 budget, we were on column one there under clinic, I see it about $1 million, and then the total revenue received in 2022 was about 834, so less. 2023, obviously, there's a big reduction in what was budgeted. So even at this $960,000, I have some concerns that we won't actually realize those numbers if we look at the historical trend for their total revenue. You said before that a main cause of that was employees. Can you just explain how the lack of employees then causes revenue to go down?
I can attempt, but I think the director might be better at that than I am, the clinic director.
Please. Mr. Steiner, would you be amicable to answering a few questions? Great. Please, I go wherever you're most comfortable, sir. There we go. I shouldn't have threw that softball up there.
Thank you very much. I think Manager Ryan did a great job on that overview. So, for example, today we have Sherry, who is our benefits and accounts analyst. She's the only person up front. Val is off. Esty's off. We have a position that's open, the medical accounts analyst. So Sherry's duty as that benefits analyst or specialist, if you will, her role is to help people in open enrollment. She helps people get on whatever's the most appropriate form of healthcare for them economically. Her role is not to understand the complexities of how much is the percentage that is owed by the person who comes in, or the copay, or the sliding scale fee, or anything else. So what we're doing is we're rendering great care to the patient and oftentimes asking for information that we will send you a bill in hopes that they will pay. Hope is a bad strategy on this. So we estimate that we lose about $8,000 a month in missed copays, missed sliding scale fee, inaccurate data, and the time to go back and get the right thing. So we're about $96,000 to $100,000 deficit just in those positions right there.
And Mr. Steiner, in that, so if you had more people available to do those things, the billing, the follow-up work, you would think that would result in greater revenues?
There's no doubt in my mind.
Okay.
I do want to say when we built the budget, we built very conservatively on the revenue side. We did not build, quote unquote, conservatively on the expense side. And by that, I mean, in your expense items, you'll see consulting physicians, I believe. And that's for your dentist, that is for psychiatry, that is for the pediatrician, that is for doctors coming in. I don't have any revenue that they generate that goes back to the revenue side. I'm loading fully the 100% expense of having them, but gaining no revenue. So I know that I'm not loading up the revenue side appropriately. In addition, on the expense side, if I can, Manager Ryan is absolutely accurate saying this is for three providers here every day and during the season, four providers. That is built in at the higher locum tenens rate unless I have a provider on contract right now. How that means to this assembly is that expense of $1.07 million has in it locum tenens rate, which is $930 a day, every day. So if there's 31 days in the month, it's 930 times 31. If I can contract with that provider directly, it's $900 per work day, 5 days a week, not seven. And we have providers who have given us their time. We have 5 months out of 12 that's already loaded up fully for 2024. We have the other months that are not. So I've had to load that figure in there of $930 a day times 31 in January times three, which turns out to be about $88,000 in January. If I can direct contract with somebody, I can reduce that amount. So I don't know if that made sense to you.
It did. And I just a question prior.
Yes, sir.
So the three locums and the four locums, is that an increase in what we saw last year? What was our staffing levels last year?
The staffing level was there. The when at the end of the budget cycle, the budget was reduced and it was find out where you can find that reduction. It wasn't a line item. Hey, Thomas, this needs to be eliminated. It was $350,000 a reduction. And can you manage within that? So, the work that we've done, you know, we're through September expenses and we're under budget by $199,000 on last year's budget. Now, included in that is I've got 7 positions out of 18 that are vacant. So I'm operating at 60%, you know, staffing. And that's where we're missing it, like up front. You know, when Val is out, she's a stalwart. When she's there, when she's out, and she's out taking care of her family, 1 week a month, she's gone. And that's what she needs to do. I don't fault her one iota, but that's kind of the crux that we run into is when you're only staffed at 60%, when somebody's missing, not only do you not do your job, but you're doing somebody else's job poorly, then they're coming back in trying to backfill what mistakes you've made. So I think on the revenue side, with the dentists coming in, with the doctors coming in, with the psychiatrist in, you're going to see revenue. What that looks like, I don't know. I know it's built in expense-wise. Expense-wise, you will see a decrease in locum tenens as we get more contracts in. So let me back up to a contract. We contract independently, say with the Bill Weisses, with the Brittany Chambers, with the Connor Cahalans. We don't go through a locum tenens company. When we have to, we will go through a locum tenens company, and they'll send the David Bartels, the Tracys, the Stacys, the people that you know, but they're charging us $930 every day, 7 days a week. And the locum provider is not getting that. The company's getting that. And then the company pays the provider whatever they negotiate. Our negotiated rate is $900 a day, work day. If we were to hire somebody, and we're not turning anybody away who's looking to be hired, so don't hear that, the average cost would be $822 a day. So it's $78 a work day more expensive to contract directly with a locum tenens person than it is to have someone living in the community working for you. So there's a misperception, if you will, that locums are more expensive. Yes, locums through a locums company is more expensive. Direct contracting with a provider coming in is not.
Mr. Steiner, again, we're looking at a budget here, basically a double. It's doubled from last year to this year. In fact, it's more than doubled. What's the primary reason, I guess, for that increase? I mean, obviously a more than doubled increase. Is it mainly salaries? Is there equipment? What's causing that, that increase?
We're offering more services. We've got doctors coming in versus nurse practitioners or PAs. We've got two psychiatry companies coming in. We're offering dental. We're offering pediatrics. And these are all new services. Now, Dr. Amy was here before, but this was at the largesse of Bartlett. Now Bartlett's discontinued that, but we feel that pediatric care in this community is necessary. So we're bearing the cost of bringing Dr. Amy down. Then we will bill and collect for whomever she sees, but we've never done that. So I don't know what that revenue looks like. So you're seeing a lot more revenue or expense, but you're expanding your services greatly, especially for the psychiatric side.
So we're seeing an expansion of services, and we're also feeling the brunt of the budget requirements to bring those services in. That's correct?
Okay. And also that locum tenens rate. So just know that when that line item of $1.07 million is in there, that's at hiring a Wilderness Locum Tenens company to fill in every gap that I have.
That's the most expensive option.
The most expensive option, correct.
Member Potter?
Thank you, Your Honor. So would, in the case of Dr. Amy, would she fall under the line item for consultant specialist or the visiting providers?
Providers.
Right. Then, so who does fall under the consultant specialists
expense line? That is primarily like your lab billing, and Heather's right there. She can answer that. I'm just going off the top of my head. So Heather.
A big part of that is course fee, I think.
And that should rotate off in February.
I don't know the contract.
I think there's a sunset to that. I don't know.
And then any other office contract work that you have right now, that's covering the gaps. Yeah, billing. I think, I know there's a billing line item for.
Any other questions for Mr. Steiner? Assemblymember Hansen.
Mr. Steiner, so with the increased medical options and providers that we have with doctors and, like you said, pediatricians, were those things that were budgeted in last year's budget, or these are things that you've just brought on this year?
Just this year.
And so the Dahl board decided to do
yes,
that?
Sir.
Okay. Are those requirements of the HRSA grant?
The HRSA grant requirement is primary preventative care for this community, which can be addressed through PAs, MPs. It does not have to be physicians coming in. It does not have to be pediatricians. I think part of that grant deals with dental. So we have a pediatric dentist coming in February. That was not budgeted. And hygienists for teeth cleaning for adults and pediatrics.
So that's really the only thing outside of the primary care is dentistry?
I believe dentistry, behavioral health, and primary preventative care or the big buckets for that.
And we're meeting those requirements.
Yes, sir.
For you know, what kind of
yes,
services
sir.
Those are through the HRSA grant.
Yes, sir.
So these are requests then, and I'm just trying to understand how we're double the budget of what was last year. These are requests from the Dahl board that you've brought on to meet requests from the community. Is that, requests from the Dahl board as to how you've come up with a budget that's double?
Yes, sir. That is accurate. What are the needs of this community? I think when we looked at, you know, Skagway 2030, these were the needs. When you look at the strategic plan, here are the seven top needs. How are we addressing those? And that's what drives those decisions.
And how often are these providers coming?
So you would have the pediatrician probably three times a year. Your dentist, we don't know what we're going to have until we're involved, because we haven't had dentistry since before COVID. So I don't know what kind of volume that is. I know pre-COVID, Dr. Erickson was here for 4 days, 10 hours a day, and there was a waiting list every time he came. Now, in that period since he's been gone, I don't know if this community has found dental arrangements in Whitehorse and Juneau that they're quite comfortable with and won't attend the clinic at all for that service. I can only go on what was the data from pre-COVID. And if I may, you ask a great question on that. If I can segue, there are two sources of revenue that we haven't addressed, and one of them is Medicaid. Medicaid has been informed by the Alaska Primary Care Association that their ways that they are reimbursing us is against federal law. And the Medicaid commissioner has said, yes, I see what you're saying. And so very narrowly, what happened is when this became an FQHC, we were given a reimbursement rate that was the state average. That's illegal. It has to be from our cost reporting or a like facility, where the only like facility that we have is like Dutch Harbor. Other FQHCs are in a town that has other healthcare options. We're it. So Medicaid rate is going to change for us favorably. When it happens, I don't know. But we know it will happen, and we know it will be a favorable impact. To your point of HRSA grant, the scope and intensity of the services we provide, because we're the only provider, I don't think HRSA recognizes that. When we wrote the grant X number of years ago, we have evolved into something completely different. We can't correct HRSA's reimbursement to us of $1.345 million until we address the issue with Medicaid. Once Medicaid is done, then we can go back to HRSA and say, the scope and intensity of what we have on paper does not accurately reflect what we're doing here. And I would imagine, fingers up in the wind, there's going to be a favorable impact economically on the HRSA grant to us. When that happens, I don't know. I don't know.
Okay. In your opinion, we are compliant with the HRSA grant?
No, sir, we're not.
We're not?
No.
Why not?
Governance.
How do you mean in governance?
Well, we're HRSA's coming in. They'll be here October 30th, 31st, and November 1st. When they come in, and they will explain to us what they feel is out of compliance, and they will give us the opportunity to be back in compliance. HRSA is not going to say to us that, hey, we're shutting you down or we're not giving you money. That's not an option. What they're going to say is, here's what the HRSA rules and regulations say. Here's what I'm seeing HRSA says, and here's governance, the assembly, and the governing board. As the assembly, as the grantee, the governing board, as a co-applicant agreement, here's how y'all need to work together in order to be in compliance.
Is this a moving target? Because this happens, seems like constantly you have some administrator who reviews the HRSA grant, and they kind of have a magic red pen and pick out special words that they don't like. And every year we kind of come up with a new term for symbiotic co-governance. And it's been that way since I can remember. And it doesn't seem like we do anything different. It seems like it's a very arbitrary determination whether our governance is compliant or not. And I'm not aware of structural changes that haven't been vetted by HRSA that have happened.
I think that's a very valid question and a very valid statement. When our agreement was made, there was no HRSA compliance manual. And Deb was sitting in the meeting as a board member during CORE's prior to me. And the HRSA compliance manual came out after the co-applicant agreement was done. So I don't think there's any malice. I don't think there's ever been a reconciliation between what the HRSA manual says, what the co-applicant agreement has in it. So I think there's an opportunity there.
Do they change the regulations every year? Because it sure seems that way from where I sit.
I think the last one was 2018.
Okay.
And to your point, this was identified in operational site visit done by APCA. This is not anything new. This has been identified since 2019, since 2023.
So what should happen, if in your opinion, so that we're compliant in governance with the HRSA grant? Because this is a constant discussion, I'm going to say discussion, between the DAL board and the assembly.
Point of order, is this budget related?
If we don't lose the HRSA grant, it sure is.
Are we at risk of losing the HRSA grant? Are we at risk of losing the HRSA grant?
No, ma'am.
I actually have may I ask a question?
Well, Assemblymember Weddle, can we please wait? I want to let Assemblymember Hansen continue this his questions if he has further questions. I think these are pertinent to the budget discussion for a little more.
So, Your Honor, if I may, and I'm sorry if I'm misstepping, so please forgive me. I don't know the procedures, policies. So, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, October 30th, 31st, November 1st is the operational site visit. This is where our triennial survey is done. HRSA has already identified that we're out of compliance. And so on November 1st and November 2nd, one of the surveyors will stay behind and meet with the assembly and the governing board to say, here's where we are out of compliance. Here's what I've seen compliance might look like, but assembly and governing board, you get to decide how that looks.
Thank you.
Assemblymember Weddle.
Thank you. You mentioned that the Medicaid source of revenue might be changing based on reassessment of the reimbursements.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you know if that is something that could be reimbursed retroactively?
I don't believe it can be reimbursed retroactively. The law firm that's been engaged by the Alaska Primary Care Association, who's doing this on behalf of the 25 health centers, has said to untangle that would be a Herculean effort. There's some things that are going to require code change, which is going to be a little bit longer. There's some things that the commissioner, if that's her name or her title, can do administratively. And what they're doing administratively, they can. For example, I know I'm in the weeds. Y'all can tune out. If you have Medicare and Medicaid, what Medicaid is doing is paying the rest of the copay for Medicare. That's illegal. You have to pay the remainder of what Medicaid would have paid, which is a higher rate than Medicare. So we're being shortchanged, if you will, not reimbursed fully. That's administratively. That can be done now. And that's what she's looking at doing and saying, hey, here's some of the steps in good faith. Yes, you're right. We're trying to address. And she's saying some of it is code. We've done something and it's going to have to go through legislative process.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. No, thank you.
Mr. Steiner, just one more question. Well,
yes, sir.
From me anyway. If we required you to operate on the same funding that you had last year, can you give us a synopsis of how you would operate in that environment? If you were, what would that result in? And if we said we'd like for you to try to operate within last year's budget, what would that result in?
Well, I'd have $200,000 more than I have right now. How about that? If I'm $200,000 under budget, management will always deliver what's expected of it. We'll make it work.
What type of I assume we wouldn't see those expanded services. Would that be something that you would not make available, or are there other items that would be initially clear to you that you would remove?
We would constantly have to reprioritize what we're doing right now. I know in my heart of hearts, I'm losing $8,000 a month. That's easy money sitting on the table. A revenue stream begins and ends with a provider. Every time I limit that doctor, limit that dentist, limit that psychiatrist, I am limiting revenue streams. So, I don't know how it would look. I have to protect the providers because it's not the volume of work that we do. But if there's only two providers here, like there is today, well, for example, 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, Bill got COVID. This community had one provider, Karen, for five straight days. She was on call every day for five straight days, saw everybody in that clinic for five straight days while Bill was sick, and this community never knew it. We'll make it happen, but in doing so, I'm going to crush the providers. And in doing so, I won't get Karen back. I won't get Brittany back. I won't get Bill back. So in the short term, we can make it happen. Longitudinally, that may be eating our young.
Mr. Steiner, do you feel that this level of funding will be required into the future? Do you think that once we get these providers in place or these expanded services, that they'll start to make revenue and then we'll actually see our cost come down? Is that the plan?
No doubt in my mind. So if you think of that peace signal, I guess, or Mercedes-Benz signal, if you're higher up, there's only three sources of revenue. That's clinic operations, HRSA grant, and sales tax transfer. The HRSA grant is pretty stable. So every time that we get a new grant, I'm reducing sales tax transfer. Every time I do something better at the clinic, I'm reducing sales tax transfer. So last year, we were looking at $974,000 worth of sales tax transfer. We just did a drawdown of $603,000 probably last week, which means that we've done a sales tax at the end of that transaction. We would have done a sales tax transfer of $474,000.
Thank you. It sounds like you want to spend money to make money, maybe.
Thank you. Hopefully. I'll answer any questions that you have, and I'll take you down in the weeds, and I apologize.
That's okay. Thank you for your time, sir. I just make sure. Any other questions for Mr. Steiner from the dais? Okay. Thank you, sir. Thank you for coming down. Okay. Any further discussion on the clinic? All right. I think this is one that I'll be interested to see what the manager's final budget looks like when this comes back. This is 120% increase over last year's budget. So I can see Mr. Steiner's point where he wants to bring in more services, hopefully make more revenue from those services. But again, this is a big jump. And we're gonna have to consider the impacts of that on our overall budget. So
I think Brad, any other I think Orion had another question. Did you, Orion? Or a statement. I don't know.
It's not really a question. It's just my frustration that I'm not in the medical field, but that we are entirely dependent on locums. When a few short years ago, these people lived here year round. I do not understand the market, but when I'm told that's the only way, it's very hard for me to accept that. And I think it was not very long ago, our nurses lived here year round. They had kids in school here. They were part of our churches. They were shopping with us. They were living with us year round. And I have a very hard time accepting that has just vanished and it's no longer possible. It's told to me and I don't accept it.
Manager Ryan, anything further on the clinic budget?
No, I don't think so. Unless there's any other laments, we'll bring something back to you.
Okay, then we'll move on to garbage 1110.
All right. If you look at the garbage budget, revenue is up, and that is primarily due to a rate increase. So if you look across the 45-15 line there, you'll see that's up 7.9%. And that really is that we have a rate increase going in effect this year, which then kind of bleeds through the whole thing. And you can see an overall 9% increase in revenue there. Not significant, but you know, we're always trying to catch up. As you read earlier, enterprise funds theoretically pay for themselves, but we choose to subsidize them at some level, you know, to benefit the community. If you look down into the expenses, right off the bat, you're going to see a significant increase in contractual. That is because we are building a transfer station. It should be done in June of next summer. And we're hoping that we can start the process of baling and shipping out municipal solid waste. One, it's a little bit of a security plan here in case the incinerator does go down. Two, we want to get ready to get that in order and understand how it's going to work, because the next step is to take the incinerator out and replace it. Also, there's some additional brush and stone processing in that contractual line. We don't have to do that, but we would like to do that. As you slide down, there's an equipment line. It's gone up significantly. It's really just some tools and air compressor, and it's a small part in the budget. It's $15,000. Materials and supplies has gone down 77%. That is $50,000 as opposed to $220,000. That's the bear cans that we didn't buy this year. I've talked to at least one assembly member about this. We never bought the bear cans primarily because we didn't have an established program to move that forward. I think if we're going to discuss and buy bear cans ever, we need to understand, are we charging an additional fee for them, and how are we going to put that on the ground? I think the assembly also has to understand that these bear cans do slow down the route. So it's going to increase some labor. They're good cans. They're robust, and that's great, but they do slow down the route a little bit. And then we would really, really like a plan that said, this is the quarterly fee everybody's going to pay, and they're going to get a can, and it's going to be identified for them, and they're just going to pay it, or how you want to implement that program. So I don't have a budget item in there for that until it's clear on what program and how we want to manage it. Also, we did originally, our price was built on some cans that we could source through the hardware, and the smaller cans dropped out, which is a bit of a problem. We'll have to change that and probably go up in price if we want to do that in the future. Salaries. Utilities, you see a pretty good increase there, 16%. There's an AP&T increase in rates we're all aware of as well. We'll have a transfer station. We think that'll eat more energy. And then if you go down capital outlay, if we're going to ship municipal solid waste, we need containers. That's $150,000. That's three containers. Again, we don't have to do that, but we'd like to. The way this works generally is you have to have containers. They're closed containers, and you bale and you put your municipal solid waste in there and you ship them down to one of the two vendors that takes them. You can essentially use their containers, but the problem is when they sit, you get charged a storage fee. And while we might be busy enough to do that in the summertime, we're going to struggle with that in the winter. And we think the cost offset in the long run would be better to have our own containers. And we believe right now the ideal number is three. You got one going down, one coming back, and one that you're loading. It's kind of just a rotation like that. And then I think recycling expense is going to go up a little bit. That is really the budget in a hole there. It's up 7.2%, which means we'll need a subsidy of about $576,000 of CPV funds to make that budget whole. Last year, we had a budget of $551,000. So that is garbage. There's nothing flashy about it. It's just trying to do keep the town clean and run our garbage appropriately.
Assemblymember Potter.
Thank you, Your Honor. How much solid waste do you anticipate having to ship?
Well, we don't anticipate that we'll have to ship any, where it's, unless the incinerator goes down. And at that point, I don't know that I can estimate that number. I don't know if Tyson, you can estimate that number. It's $1,500 tons in a year. Yeah. So a portion.
So
of
this
that.
Is just being proactive in case the incinerator.
That and trying to get up to speed to actually get the shipping program down. So when we take this incinerator down, we don't have any hiccups. And then you're also like the containers don't go away, right? So the following year, you won't be buying containers. You'll have them.
Any further questions on garbage?
All right.
Assemblymember Hansen.
Thank you, Your Honor. So if I read this correctly, really the expense of garbage is paid for by CPV almost entirely?
Well, you're getting $799,000 in revenue, and then you're getting $576,000 from CPV funds. So it's under half. 42% CPV.
40%?
42% CPV.
But that's because of the incinerator or the transfer station costs this year. Is that correct?
It's going up a little bit, but not much. You know, it's 4.6% more than it was last year.
But in terms of what we're transferring from CPV,
yeah,
it's down this year because we're allocating that to the transfer station. Typically, we allocate a lot more from CPV to pay for garbage.
Well, it's just a matter of revenue is replacing. First, you use your revenue, and that's what we need to make the budget whole is for $576,000. So first is the revenue from the enterprise fund, and then you just have to fill the gap, which is $576,000. Not sure I'm answering your question.
Why it's not 67% or whatever.
Because it's not needed. You know, if the budget was higher, if operations were higher, then we would add more CPV funds. But because we have
revenue
that takes up, you know, the greater percentage, 58%, that's why it's 42% CPV.
Thank you.
Manager Ryan, could you just remind me, what was our rate hike this year for garbage? Was it 8%?
9.5.
9.5?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we're going to continue that for the next 5 years?
I can't remember. Is this one the next 5 years? No. Steve knows.
Clerk Burnham.
Resolution 2318R. Raises the rates 9.5% until 2020, FY26.
26. Okay. Thank you, Clerk Burnham. Thank you. I can see, again, it's nice that we have the CPV funds to make up the difference. We can see how subsidized this enterprise fund is. And it's nice that our rates are kept as low through those CPV funds. Obviously, if we had to pay this all out of enterprise funds, our rates would be much higher. Any other questions on garbage? Nope. Okay. Moving on to 1180, water and sewer.
Again, revenue is up because of rate increases, primarily. You see that on the 4450 line there. We got dock water. connections. It's nothing really flashy. It's pretty standard. The big increase is the percentage of rate increase. You get down, you see there's about $689,000 in revenue. If you look at contractual, that's due to additional sampling and shipping sludge. So this is, again, trying to get prepared for when the incinerator is down. We burn our sludge now. So that's shipping of sludge. We want to try doing that this year as well. Nothing really stands out until you, it's salaries. You got utilities going up, AP&T increase. We're making some assumptions there. And then when you get down to the bottom, the other one that sticks out is the capital outlay. And that is sludge shipping containers, the same as before. You got to have sludge shipping containers. Depending on which vendor we use, we'll most likely go with the RFP to figure that out. We haven't come to that conclusion yet, but sometimes you put zippered liners in them, and sometimes you do some other way to get it out there, and I'm not 100% how that's going to happen. But we got that in there to try to get this sorted out. And this is, you know, could become really important if the incinerator does go down, because what you don't want is a bunch of sludge sitting around. It's unpleasant at best. So if you look through that whole budget, very similar to the last one, although this one's harder for me to read because it's smaller, we're going to subsidize this with $620,000 of CPV or excise tax, which is what percentage, Heather? The excise tax for the 47.3. Same as before. You know, revenue is the larger portion of the budget, and then we fill in the gap with the CPV excise funds.
Manager Ryan, is it two? We need containers for garbage, and we need special containers for sludge. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
I think the sludge are 20-foot containers. Is that correct? Yeah. So they're smaller. Sludge is heavy. Smaller containers. The garbage are 40s. 40s or 53s? Garbage. 40s for MSW. Okay. Yeah.
And sludge, obviously, that's the remainder after the wastewater treatment process. Then we have sludge remaining, and this
gets shipped out. Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Grows great potatoes.
Thank you. Okay, any questions, any further questions on water or sewer? All right, onward. Port.
All right, so we have the port budget. It's more complicated. And for 23, so far, I just want to highlight we've realized about $7.6 million in revenue. We're not done. We should realize more of that, and we should have a reasonably good port revenue surplus from 2023. In 24, we project it's going to go higher. You know, we took over, and so we didn't have a full year. In 23, so now 24, some things have been solidified. We've got the White Pass easement slash lease, you know, permits and licenses, investment percentages. And then as you keep going down, the first line of significance is the lease and rental revenue. And those are the leases for Petromarine, Alaska Marine Lines, Tempsco, all the companies that have upland leases down there or will have upland leases down there. And that $667,000 is, according to our resolution, what we are using in our operational budgets, right? So that you passed a resolution that said we can use that in operational budget. So you see that later slide over. And then the vessel impact fee is the large source of funding there. It's $11.48 million. That is the vessel impact fee this year went up an additional $5. Primarily to start the offset of the rock slide mitigation, but just in general, that's going to be a perpetual ongoing problem. Nobody is denying that at this point. And we know we're going to be managing that, but we also just have a lot of infrastructure to upgrade in the port. And we're doing lots and lots of that. And the port is changing all the time and looking better and better. And then you go down, revenue, wharfage, barge fees is going to be up. We'll have a full year. It's actually going to be pretty close to that by the end of this year. And then you have dockage. That's the, you know, the linear foot to tie up to the docks. So all of that totals $14.5 million in 2024. I want to say that that is projected on 85% of the cruise ship capacity, according to the schedule of 2024. That's what we saw this year, more or less, about 1 million passengers. You know, and if you looked at the cruise ship schedule before the season started, it was like 1.26 million if they all came in 100% capacity. It's a little bit higher than that in 2024, not much. And so we've used that same 85%, which is, again, about 1 million passengers. It's 1 million and some change. So that's, we're projecting a relatively flat cruise ship season as far as numbers go. So that's what you're seeing down there. And that is what we're projecting that number on. So if you go through the port budget, then we have some large items in here. We've really burned through a lot of this money, and I think we'll continue to do that next year. Contractual, that can be anything from any upgrade or maintenance that we're doing down in the port. We're doing lots of things down there. We continue to upgrade, put fill down to store things, cover up the lead contaminated that's exposed to the surface, you name it, things are happening down there. Engineering is the same thing. We haven't spent a lot of that this year, but we anticipate needing engineers. We're constantly looking at whether the open cells are failing or not, whether we need to design new dolphin, you know, caps, whatever it may be. Legal, that's, you know, we use the lawyers and legal counsel a lot, berthing agreements, negotiations, you name it. And I don't see that going away. That's going to continue in 25. Insurance is just insurance, admin, employee payroll. That's going to go up, we hope, in essence, because we want to pick up an additional employee, someone down there to help with maintenance and just in general every day. Also, the dock ambassadors come in and maybe in there under the port. Equipment, we have quite a bit of equipment down there, signage, et cetera. We just keep trying to improve the port, and we want to continue doing that. We've got repairs and maintenance, Broadway docks, line painting, shelters, kiosks. We already talked about salaries, you know, facilities maintenance, rock spotters, waterfront ambassadors, goes on. We have travel and training. Right now it's $50,000. I anticipate that to go up. We're still sliding things around to make sure the port is paying for appropriate travel, whether that's the executive office, myself included, assembly members traveling on behalf of the port. I think that'll slide a little bit. Utilities, janitorial. We have capital outlay, 4 kiosks, generators, groundskeeper vehicle. I think we're hoping for like one of the little carts, like Public Works uses. Environmental compliance, I think that's going to be huge next year. We don't know, but we got a pretty big number in there. We're working towards that. You know, we're managing a lot of stormwater right now off of the ore shed and building, and that continues to be an ongoing management issue. Hopefully we can get that so we're collecting less water and manage it more efficiently, but that's going to take some time and some money. Port bond, we have $2 million. That's the revenue bond. It won't be the full bond payment. 25 will be the first full bond payment of $2.9 million, but we anticipate about $2 million in 2024. Website, brochures, business cards, that's marketing, office supplies. All of that comes down to total about $5 million for the operations of the port. Which is weighed against the $14.5 million in revenue. But if you scroll down to the bottom there in the capital projects, and we'll be talking about this on Friday, there's significant outlays that need to happen. You know, we believe we have the BRIC grant for nearly $20 million. That requires a 20% match. We think over 2 years, that's about $4.5 million for that. I want to have additional funds allocated for project overruns on the current doc project that's going on and anything that we may need. And so that will certainly come down depending on how the project goes on. But in total, as it sits right now, we're still looking at about a $4 million surplus there, even with the match to the BRIC grant of $4.5 million.
Manager Ryan, just quickly on the backup to the revenue for the port, the 2023 total budget, column three, we go down and we see that, you know, $6.4 million was budgeted, and we've so far to date seen $7.6 million. And so obviously more revenue is coming in by the end of the year. And so the difference between those numbers is where you're talking about that $2 to $3 million surplus from this year. Is that correct?
Yeah, correct. So we'll see more revenue coming in. It's not done. You know, we're anticipating more revenue. We're also anticipating more expenses. So it's 7.6 now. We've spent 2.5. One of the big expenses we know we have coming up is $1.2 million in a bond payment. But we also anticipate more revenue here. And depending on how much of the commercial fees that the harbor gets from tendering and of the cruise ships, passengers, the port will reimburse that to the harbor. The port fund will reimburse that to the harbor if we don't receive all of those commercial funds. And we know we're not going to reap all of them, because when we pushed a boat off, a cruise ship off of Broadway intentionally for the port project this year, we informed that boat that we wouldn't be asking for those commercial fees from tendering operations. So there's some there, but there shouldn't be that many.
Okay. Where does the $2 to $3 million, where does that reserve go to? Does that sit in the port fund? Is that where you manage it?
Sits in the port fund, and we keep that available for, you know, future projects in the port enterprise fund.
Okay. And that's the intention. That plan is to keep it in there for matching emergencies, et cetera.
Yeah. And I think we got a lot of unknowns, right? We've got a big project going down there. And we went into that project with very low contingency. We also have a rock slide that we want to mitigate, and potentially a grant that we have to match, and a hillside that outside of that main slide that also needs work. So not just the current slide, but nobody that's been down there and is working on it is any illusion that we don't have to manage the rest of that hillside as well. So, and that's just the start. You know, the port is getting in better and better shape all the time, but we, you know, the goal is to continue to pour back into the port funds until it's, you know, pristine. And we also have not put any funds. Remember, like, we've got nothing into upland improvements to speak of. You know, we've got no seawalk. We had all those plans for the uplands on the Ore Peninsula. And we had to pull that all out of this bigger project. And so those are things that we need to keep in mind and decide when we have enough funds to improve all of that operation, restrooms, kiosks, the whole thing down there at a bare minimum on the cruise, on the ore terminal. And then we can turn and start looking, you know, at Broadway as well.
Okay. For the port bond itself, for the 2024, the total payment on the port bond, the revenue bond, $65 million that the voters approved, the yearly payment for the interest and everything included, what is that amount? Is that the $2,096,000?
In 2024, yes. In 2025, it will be $2.9 million. I believe that's what it'll be, roughly.
Does it?
It'll be higher.
Higher than that,
if we take the remaining authorization out.
In 24?
Yeah.
So it will potentially go up in 24.
Will it continue to increase yearly, or is it going to plateau out?
It's the max.
I don't know off the top of my head what the highest payment is for a year, but it's around that amount. It just changes, the principal changes, but the payment amount roughly is going to stay that amount.
Around 3 million.
But once we take out the other $35 million, that we have authorized by the voters, then this is going to double. But it's not, we're not going to recognize that right away in 24.
Okay. So after 24, then we're probably around $3 million payment roughly on the bond.
I would per year. Venture to say probably 3.5.
Okay. And with that included, we're looking here that even in 2024, we're looking at another $4 million reserve, or we're in the black $4 million supposedly next year in 24 at the port.
Correct.
Well, that's great news. I mean, I understand we have a lot of things to pay for, and I understand the dock and the port is still developing, but you know, for our first year in operation to see a $2 to $3 million surplus, and then our next year to look at a $4 million surplus, you know, those are positive things. So I think the vision of us taking over our port is absolutely paying off like people thought it would. Thank you. Any questions on the port? Assemblymember Hanson.
Thank you, Your Honor. One quick question. The revenue where it says white pass, $126,100. Is that for the easements, the acreage of the easements?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, interesting that it's almost the same as 68 acres of waterfront property.
Quite. Assemblymember Burnham.
Thank you, Your Honor. I was just looking at this, the PILT. What is...
Yeah, so you're talking about the revenue on the 667 or down...
5135 on the expense.
Oh, on expense.
$460,000. That was for...
Oh, so what we did last year is we called it payment in lieu of taxes, which was really the revenue amount of the leases that we had last year. This year, because of that resolution that passed and said we could use the lease revenue in the operating budget, we've just shifted that down now to that 667 lease going to the operating budget. So we were going to use the strategy of payment in lieu of taxes, because those aren't paying, those leases aren't paying taxes, you know, property taxes. So, but they are paying the lease rate, and that would have went to our operational budget. But now we're using the lease rate into the operational budget instead of PILT. So that 460 is, you know, I'll say a three quarters of a year of 667, right? Because that's what we're going to yield this year out of the upland leases.
And the, I mean, it's not in the 23 budget, but I was just wondering the changes to the pension. I was wondering what that was in relation to.
Changes to the pension.
Those are all audit adjustments based on the state's requirement for our pension liabilities. So at this point, it's a non-cash item, but I have to record any changes to it in the revenue or expense, depending on how it calculates out. But it all has to do with the PERS levels of funding and the state requirements. We don't budget for it because I don't know what it's going to be.
Okay. Thank you.
Manager Ryan, you mentioned that you're at, your assumption was 85% of the scheduled passengers, roughly 1 million. Last year you did 70%, or was it 60? 60% last year.
We I pounded my fist on 750,000. And so Cody and Galen were nice enough to back calculate that to 60%. So that was what I thought our conservative number was last year.
85%, that seems appropriate. Okay. Any other questions regarding the port? Assemblymember Potter?
Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to just clarify. We came in at that 85% number this year because of the loss of the Quantum. And a couple other, there, I guess, weather.
Yeah, I mean, we've lost some from weather. We lost the quantum. Like, some have pushed off. I think we had one that pushed off because they didn't necessarily want to go forward. And they weren't, 100% full at the start of the season, right?
All right. Any more questions on the port? Okay, moving on to Small Boat Harbor.
So Small Boat Harbor, the first thing of note really is the annual moorage is going up a little bit. The price has gone up 20 cents for that. As you scroll down, the storage is going up a little bit as well, the storage rate. And then the one that I think deserves the most discussion is the commercial user fees. So if you go, back to 2022, it's considerably lower. And that is because, that's like the fast ferry paying the commercial user fee. There's a fee, fishing charter boats, all of the tour bus boats that run in and out of there. What happens in 2023 and what we projected was that you're going to need to have all of these tenders coming in from the cruise ships, and they're going to have to pay that commercial user fee. We waived that when we did it in 2022 because it was an emergency. I didn't think it was right in 23 to waive it because it's planned and it is hard on the Small Boat Harbor facilities. And so you have a Small Boat Harbor facility. It's an enterprise fund. You're banging up bull rails, you're breaking lights, poles, you're taking away services. I mean, we took all of the Seawalk away this year, really, for ground transportation. So we projected about $593,000. Now, what we're going to get out of that is still up for debate. We think we're going to get significantly more than that $68,000. But if we don't get it out of the cruise ships, or at least some of it that we don't get out, the port will pay back to the harbor fund because it is a port operational expense that is impacting the harbor. And I do that to all enterprise funds. For example, if we have, the current dock project, if they have to throw stuff away at our incinerator, we don't waive it and say it's free because it's our project. We charge them because garbage is an enterprise fund. And if we don't charge them, that means the residents then are picking up that ops offset potentially of the garbage fees. So for a port project. So in this, if we don't realize that, and I don't think we're going to realize the 593 because we didn't get as many tendering through there as we thought because we ended up with the busing operation, we'll still be considerably more money. And that estimate right now is very similar. We think we're going to see about $383,000 in commercial fees through the port next year with that tendering operation, primarily the tendering operation. That's the big bump there. But it's a turn down from what we projected in 23, but still a significant increase for port operations in general, which then slides all the way down to an operational budget for the port of $640,000. And then as you go through that budget, it's pretty much a standard port budget. I don't think a lot has changed as we go down. It's just not a lot of increases there from what we've budgeted in the past until you get down to capital outlay. And that is cameras, servers, and two workstations. We've had a few incidents on the dock this year that we would like a better view of and on the Seawalk. And so we're trying to put cameras on there to cover some of the dead spots down there so that we know when, somebody slips and falls or somebody decides to jump in the water, we have some images of that, or for that matter, somebody runs their boat into a bull rail and breaks it, we know who it is. So that's what that is. And really, we have then a budget finally down there, $494,000, which is well below the revenue line. And there's not a lot to be said about that other than as you go down, we have some money that's going to eat up the surplus from that budget. So that this is an enterprise fund, right? So this year we should have money that we haven't expended into the harbor fund. 2024, same thing. We should have a surplus in that. However, we also have a failing breakwater. And we all, I think, know that. And so that's going to hit the budget out of some of the harbor funds and some of the port fund. And you'll see that in your capital outlay budget. Right now, I think we got 390 down there, but it's going to change to 500,000. And then the rest of it will be budgeted in the capital outlay from port. So just keep that in mind that while, you know, we're doing well down there, we also have some serious maintenance issues with the breakwater in particular, which the welds have failed, and we need to fix that before it gets worse. And it's a significant fix.
Manager Ryan, on and we discussed this briefly, it looks like that the small boat harbor is $245,000 in the red, but that's not correct, right? Because we were talking more that it's actually because of the accounting lines that were more realistically were $150,000 in the black.
So operationally, you're $150,000 in the black. The reason you're in the red is you've got this large asset that needs repaired. And that's, you know, so operationally you're in the black, but you've got to fix that breakwater.
Okay. The issue on commercial user fees, we budgeted $593,000. We only received $68,000. That's because we waived the fees or because they're not paying the fees?
We just haven't received the fees yet. We anticipate receiving a bunch more fees, and then we will also pay ourselves out of the port to the harbor on the fees where we intentionally move people. But we still anticipate a large payment of fees from cruise ships.
Okay. And if that doesn't occur, then the port pays to the small boat harbor to cover that expense.
Yeah. Or we, you know, strong arm them a little bit.
Strong arm them. Do it. And that same thing will apply for a 2024 budget at $383,000. If we don't realize those fees, then the port will cover.
Correct. And okay. And I think that 383 is more realistic of what we should see in 23. We just didn't know what to anticipate for 24 because the plan wasn't solidified when we built the budget.
Okay. Assemblymember Hansen.
Thank you, Your Honor. What was the revenue auction sale for $1?
What? Say that. Where is that at?
510, 195, 4695. It's third from the bottom.
What? I don't know. That was the sale.
Would you, if please come up and use the microphone? Thank you. State your name real quick, please.
Matt O'Boyles, Gateway Harbor Master. Yeah, that was a sale of a disposal of a vessel. We've been doing quite a bit of getting rid of different vessels and stuff like that in the staging area. So that was a sale of a vessel.
I just want to add, we were happy to get the dollar.
Yeah.
I would have paid the dollar for him.
Any further questions or comments about Small Boat Harbor? Okay. Covers our items. I'd like to let. Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Burnham?
Okay.
I was just looking forward to that dollar taking down our annual mortgage fees. It's going to be great.
Manager Ryan, if you would, just give us a final roundup on this budget, and then we'll move on to the agenda.
Yeah. I feel confident right now with this, you know, these enterprise funds budgeted the way they are, and what you'll see in your capital budget, that we have a balanced budget. Any cut in here that you take out, especially if it's, you know, sales tax related, will offset any reserves that we have to cut into for the capital budget that you see. You'll see a capital budget that's about $4 million in sales tax reserve. That's where you're going to see on Friday. But otherwise, you know, I think these are the enterprise funds. We tried to give you a solid enterprise fund without anything excessive in there, just operational and getting ready. You know, primarily garbage was and water sewer were the ones that were going up a little bit, just so we can get ready to take that incinerator down and or be ready in case it goes down on its own. You know, we know it's an old incinerator. We know it's beyond its useful life. And so we're trying to be prepared for that eventuality.
Okay, thank you, Manager Ryan, and thank you to your staff for all their hard work putting this budget together. All right, we'll move on to item three, Mayor and Assembly discussion items. Assemblymember Colodi.
Nothing at this time, Your Honor.
Assemblymember Henry. Maybe.
The only thing I have, Your Honor, is as you can see, going through the clinic fund, solid waste, water, sewer, and garbage, and so forth, we can see how heavily subsidized these different areas of the city needs are subsidized by sales tax. So I guess it's fortunate that the citizens, when they were given the vote on the clinic, decided that we should maintain control of the clinic as a city. And then secondly, I suppose it's fortunate that we did not increase the sales tax, because at this time reviewing this, I see that there's no question that we should be able to fully fund everything that has been presented to us thus far. So that's good. And then secondly, the overage carryover that we'll enjoy from the port fund, I would remind everyone that the $3, $4 million, $5 million, $6 million, whatever it may be, is going to pale in comparison to actually the expenditure that we're going to have to actually build out that Ore Peninsula, which will be tens of millions of dollars. So I would caution anybody on being enthusiastic about where we are at this particular time. But I am encouraged that we'll also see on Friday capital projects and sales tax fund, not least of which school funding should have absolutely no problem being fully funded without a sales tax increase, seeing that we are so flush. I one other reminder would be, I don't know, at last meeting it was brought up about what the the sequence of funding is for the sales tax, and I think maybe that was misstated, because actually the sales tax fund was very first instituted in Skagway to fund the school. That was the first and primary reason for sales tax being implemented in the city of Skagway. So I'm encouraged by what I see. So that's all I have.
Thank you, Dan. Assemblymember Hanson?
No, thank you, Your Honor.
Assemblymember Potter?
Thank you, Your Honor. I was going to express enthusiasm for our port revenue, but I will downgrade that to encouragement. I agree with Assemblymember Henry, and want to note what Manager Ryan said earlier. As far as the clinic budget goes, without an increase of sales tax coming in, and at the same time the voters deciding that we run this clinic, now being asked for an additional $1.2 million over last year, I think we need to ask ourselves, you know, and it's reasonable to anticipate that will increase next year as well. Kind of what is the community's taste or tolerance for what's the cap for that clinic budget? How do we find that line between providing solid care, but also having money to fund the school? So those are questions that The community needs to ask themselves and and share those decisions with us.
Thank you, Deb. Assemblymember Waddell.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to thank the manager and the treasurer for all their hard work and thoughtful consideration, future planning and infrastructure expenses. And thanks.
Thank you. Assemblymember Burnham.
Thank you, Your Honor. When we were talking about port funds and back when it used to be the big thing to try to dip into CPV for everything, I also remembered there was, I know that we've been using CPV, but there was a resolution we passed that, well, it was that we were setting aside certain amounts of the CPV for ensuring other things. I was wondering if I could ask the clerk if he happened to remember, or does he happen to know?
Clerk Burnham, go ahead, please.
Not off the top of my head. We can look into it and respond tomorrow or Thursday. Tomorrow's a holiday.
Okay, thanks. And then the other thing, you mentioned cameras and dead spots and down in that area. Is it possible to put a camera on the ore work that's going on down there at the ore dock? Because, I mean, they're moving stuff around, and I go down there every morning, take a look and see if they've finished yet. But I was wondering if there was some sort of a camera that could get set up to where even a time-lapse thing or...
I don't know the answer to that. I mean, is it possible? Anything's possible. How much time and money? I don't know. And is it in the way of the project? Yeah, I guess I hadn't really considered. You're talking about just for like people to watch it.
Just a yeah. Just like a.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know the answer.
Just throwing that idea out there because I've heard it a few different times. Of it would be neat to be able to see what's going on at the port when you can still see the port without fog or rain or whatever. But yeah, just an idea I had for that. And yeah, I don't have anything else. Yeah, except for the pool, of course, which I always have.
Thank you, Jay. I think I'd just like to end with a quick recap of where we sit. And I'd like for the manager Ryan and Treasurer Rodig to correct me, jump in there if I'm mistaken. But I think right now where we're at is we looked at the operational budget earlier. We saw how much money was being spent there. We've looked now at the enterprise fund and we're looking at how much we've spent. Now we're at a point where if there's no cuts made to these two budgets, in some fashion, that leaves very, very little for capital projects. We're going to have basically a little bit of CPV funding, I think, available for maybe 1.5 million, maybe a little less available for capital projects. So we've got a big list of capital projects, but we don't have those projects funded. Now, key to that is that we should have about 12 million in savings in 2024. So we can decide then, we could say we're going to fully fund everything in this budget. We're going to do everything they're asking. We're going to fully fund the clinic. We're going to do all those things. We're going to have a basically zero left, but we got $12 million in savings. So then we can start to decide how much of that savings do we want to spend down? Code says we got to keep about $6 million in there. That leaves us about $6 million that either we save it and we sit on it, or we spend it. We spend it on capital projects. And funding this budget, or we cut from the budgets that we've seen, we cut, you know, different items, different departments, and then we take that money and we roll that into capital projects. So I think there's where we're going to have to make our decision on which capital projects do we want to do, which ones do we want to fund, and then how do we want to fund them? Do we want to come out of savings, or do we want to cut from the budget that we've, these budgets that we've seen so far? I'm interested to see how Manager Ryan addresses that issue, what choices he makes. And then we'll have to also, each of us, sit up here and consider, how do we want to do it? Do we want to spend more or save more this year? So I hope please continue to consider that as we get closer to Friday when we look at those capital projects. We've got some big ones. So we'll have a better and a clearer picture come Friday, but keep that in mind. That's all I have. Thank you, everybody. I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
I move we adjourn.
Second.
Got a motion and a second. Roll call.
Henry.
Yes.
Waddell.
Yes.
Colodi.
Yes.
Burnham.
Yes.
Hansen.
Yes.
Potter.
Yes.
Six yeses. Motion passes.
Meeting adjourned.